Hey everybody, welcome to Screen Heroes. This is episode 114 and we are going to be talking about Avengers Infinity War.
Dun, dun, dun.
We even put special music in for this episode for those who it's are true. Listening to the pre-recorded version.
It deserves so, special music.
I thought so. I am Derek, your regular host with my two other lovely regular hosts, Ryan.
Hi.
And Ray.
Sup, dudes.
And we're crossing over with Red Shirts and Runabouts with my co-host from that show, Greg.
Hello there.
Welcome to Screen Heroes, man.
I'm looking forward to it. I've been wanting to join for a little while now.
Yeah, this is great.
How dare you keep this face away from video?
Like my mom always says, I have a face and voice for radio.
Yeah, so not clearly mistaken.
Not necessarily for the TV.
Clearly mistaken.
Well, we're excited to have Greg on the show with us. He's been part of the network for a while now, and you know we've known you for a while, so you know it's about time. I'm excited.
It's good to be here, especially on a movie like Infinity War.
This is huge, yeah. So,
yeah, there's a lot of people fighting you for guest spots, so we really had to...
That's not true at all.
Hey, I was trying to make you feel good, okay?
I had
Ian trying to get your spot, okay?
You know what? He can have it next week.
There you go.
Now, before we kind of get started on things, I'm just going to throw out the spoiler warning now for people. I know it's a touchy subject, so if you have not seen Avengers Infinity War and you care about spoilers, now would be the time to pause it and go see it before somebody else ruins it for you, because it's only a matter of time. So, I guess on the news front, we do have a new Ant-Man trailer.
Yes.
I did not get a chance to watch it yet.
It's a lot of fun. I think it's better than the second one. A lot less gimmicky, in my opinion.
Although this one kind of raised the question. If you're not a comic book fan, it kind of raised the question of, what's the point of Ant-Man? Because Wasp is literally better at everything. Except that, apparently, in the comic book, she can't grow. So that's a benefit that Ant-Man has.
She cannot. She grows in Secret Wars, and she dies because of it.
Yeah.
Not Secret Wars, Secret Invasion.
So her suit's just incapable of it, or like physiologically she has a problem with it?
It's her suit.
Okay.
So literally they should just give her the Ant-Man suit, put some wings on it, and
the blasters.
Yeah, the blasters, and...
But then there's no difference. I mean, you gotta have some... Like you said, though, in the trailer, she is... She's already the best part of the movie, and the movie's not even out yet. And I don't know if it's because Evangeline Lilly's got that action chops to her anyways. Mm. You kind of saw that in the first Ant-Man. But it's nice because this definitely looks, from the trailer, you know, we've been tricked on trailers before.
It's true.
This definitely looks like the characters are going to be the shining force of the movie. It's not going to just be the stuff happening to them.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way it was in the original Ant-Man, I feel like. So it was, that would be a good follow-up.
Now it's just everybody's going to be asking because Ant-Man's the next one that's coming out.
Yeah.
And then there's a big gap until
It's not that
March.
Big, I don't think, is it?
March.
So this Ant-Man comes out in what, November?
No, Ant-Man comes out in July.
Oh, does it really? Okay, yeah. So that is a pretty
and then
good
Captain Marvel's March.
Okay. And then Infinity War's June, right? Or
yeah.
May. Infinity Gauntlet Endgame, whatever it's going to be called.
Part 2 of 5.
Well, so Kevin Feige did say that his favorite incorrect rumor is that it'll be called Infinity Gauntlet, which means that it still might be called
Which was
Infinity
something
Gauntlet.
That Zoe Saldana slipped up on in an interview like a year ago and said.
Yeah.
And then she immediately got sniped by a Marvel sniper on the roof.
Yeah, well, that'll happen to you.
Yeah.
Those big Disney bucks, they gotta be careful.
Well, did you see that, I guess, Mark Ruffalo spoiled the entire ending of Infinity War, like, last year? He said, just wait, everybody dies.
I wonder if they're gonna start, and I think the three of us joked about this at PCC, I wonder if they're gonna start doing the whole Game of Thrones thing with Season 8, how they're just admitting fake news now, like the cast and crew.
I think that's smart.
This happens, and this is what's going on, and they take a picture of, you know, Daenerys with Cersei, and they're hugging, and they're like, you see, they're going to team up. You know it's not going to happen.
Right. No, you might as well try it. I think that, you know, maybe Abrams should have done that for Into Darkness when everyone knew it was Khan. Like, just cast a fake person as, like, Harry Mudd or something.
I didn't know it was Khan.
Anyway.
He said that with a pretty straight face. I'll give him credit, but...
Well, you know, Ryan's pretty straight all the time.
That's true.
So, he wavers a little.
Sometimes.
But... So going back to the Ant-Man and the
Wasp. You don't
want to
talk about Ryan's sexuality?
Not on Screen Heroes. I feel like it deserves its own podcast.
I'm sure we're starting soon.
Better start taking notes on that.
So Ant-Man and the Wasp and then the Captain Marvel film, what's really interesting about both of these is
they're prequels.
They're both prequels to this. And that's something Marvel hasn't done before. I guess you could call Guardians Volume 2 a prequel.
Captain America, First Avenger.
Yeah, well, kind of. That one ends up in present day, so it's like a capsulized prequel.
The majority of the movie takes place in the past. So
but it's before Avengers, though. It's not after Avengers.
But they're making that as like a truly dedicated origin story. I don't think they're doing that with Captain Marvel.
I mean, it seems like that's what they're doing.
I mean, they're certainly not doing it with Ant-Man and the Wasp. We had that already. Oh, yeah. True. So this is more of, I guess we'll find out where they are in Infinity War because of the end of this movie.
Well, we know where they are in Infinity War. Where they say in the movie, so.
Well, okay.
I just want to know, all the heroes that we've come across, you know, did they fade away? That's what I want to know.
Well, there's all the people from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Are they fading away? I mean, I don't know.
No, no, no. See, the movies don't affect the TV. Oh, like, okay. Daredevil's fine.
What do you think what do you think the Defenders and all that will call? Because, you know, there was the attack on New York.
The attack on Wakanda.
And the incident.
And the incident. What do you think this one will be called?
The attack on Wakanda.
The snap heard round the world.
Oh, no, because the only people that know about the snap are the ones that were right there. So.
Clearly a joke. I really think they have better writers than that.
Not all the time. Not all the time. Most of the time. Yeah.
Most of the time. Well, all right. So let's go into this. Let's dive into it. I'll get the numbers out of the way because everyone knows who listens.
We did have a question in chat.
I enjoy that. Oh.
Captain Marvel, yes, it's going to take place in the 90s with a pre-eye patch Nick Fury and Agent Coulson from...
Accuser still, or he's back. So yeah. Lee Pace gets a second chance at being not useless.
What's really... So there's some set photos that have been released. I don't think leaked is really the right word. They look like they were more released. But it shows Samuel L. Jackson with, like, jet black hair, and he's, you know, his face looks totally fine. He doesn't have any scarring or anything like that. So I assume his accident will take place in the movie.
Yeah. Right. It seems like a wasted effort to not, you know, they're going to do it.
And if they're going to have Ronan in there, and for those of you who aren't familiar, just Wikipedia Captain Marvel, but she's got a huge Kree element to the character. And I didn't know that Ronan was going to be part of it, which is, I think, is a good thing. Mm-hmm. It's like...
Gives him a chance to redeem a villain that was pretty much wasted.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's like Red Skull. In First Avenger, you have to have Red Skull in there because it's Captain America.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I'm glad they're doing that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sorry, now we can go to the numbers, Derek, since you're very excited about that.
You're good. Yes, so for those who saw the post-credit scene, the pager to space was to Captain Marvel. Yes.
Not Wonder Woman.
Not Wonder Woman, as some people thought. Which I'm okay with that crossover if those two companies want to agree on something.
I'm sure that's going to happen.
But yeah, not.
I just want to see a pajama party with Captain Marvel and Wonder Woman. I feel like it would go really well, and they'd have a lot to talk about.
Well, I think Wonder Woman is like DC's flagship right now.
Yeah.
So even if we hope for a crossover, DC is going to be like, not with the one that's actually working. Right.
And even with the one that's actually working, Marvel will be like, no, we like making more than $1 billion. Sorry.
Yeah. Anyway,
get to the numbers.
So here are the numbers. These are opening weekend numbers. These may or may not include Monday's numbers. I'm not unclear on that. But it has passed 280 million domestically and 440 million internationally. So it is now at 725 million in one weekend. Some of this take with a grain of salt because it opened in a lot of markets at the same time. Which
over 4,000 theaters. So one of the...
Domestically.
Yeah.
Yeah. Most of the Marvel movies opened in 4,000, so that's not...
$280 million is insane.
Yeah, it's a lot.
That's with Monday's numbers. It was like 258, I think, as of Sunday, which was still enough to beat Force Awakens, which was the current record.
Disney was really happy to just hand that record over to Disney.
Themselves. Yeah.
right? It won the number one Saturday. It broke 100 million Saturday and broke the record.
And it already had number one pre-sales.
Number one pre-sales, number one opening weekend. Obviously, number one Marvel movie, because it's number one
movie
across
with the
board.
Most Chris's in it.
It probably. I mean, I haven't done my homework on that, but probably.
You need to try harder, Derek.
I'm sorry. But
I mean, Chris Pratt. That automatically kind of ups that factor.
Oh, Chris Pratt. We'll get to Star-Lord.
We'll get to Star-Lord.
We've got a lot to talk about.
We do. So its ratings are very strong.
Everywhere across the board. Rotten Tomatoes holds an 84% between critics and viewers. IMDb is the highest with a 9.0 out of 10, which is pretty incredible. And Metacritic is the lowest with 68 out of 100. So I guess all the critics are trash-talking it on Metacritic this time instead of Rotten Tomatoes.
I am surprised to see Metacritic that much lower than the other two.
Right.
that's a pretty big gap. I'm wondering why that is.
But, you know, didn't the same thing happen with... On Metacritic, I mean, Meals Rotten Tomatoes for Black Panther and Wonder Woman got trashed, but I think one of them got hit on Metacritic as well. It's just
probably,
I don't know. It's just like Star Trek Beyond got ripped up on Metacritic, if I recall correctly. And
these aggregates are it's tough, right? It's supposed to give you somewhat of a feeling of how people are looking at the movie, but you probably shouldn't base whether or not you should see it off of those ratings.
Oh.
But it's interesting to look at the trends, and so that's why we bring it up. All right, so we have a million characters to go over, and half of them die.
I don't think we should go over individual cast members. I think we should talk about the individual team ups. Like, we should talk about the Thor, Rocket, Groot storyline, the Captain America throughout Scotland, all the way to Wakanda storyline, and then talk about Star-Lord, Tony Stark, all of them in space. So,
did anybody suspect Thor and Rocket Raccoon?
No, but I'm happy with it.
I mean, I was happy. You're right. It was great. But going into the movie, I'm like, no, that's not. This isn't going to happen.
Yeah, I did.
And Thor's like, yeah, come along. I like you, little rabbit.
I thought it was a good dynamic. It shows that Thor doesn't care what you really look like or anything, as long as you're up for the task and you're up for the challenge. I think one of my favorite lines from the whole movie is his thing about that there's a Groot elective on Asgard, and that's why he can speak Groot. Like, I love that. It's just a great line. And
that's a Taika Waititi line for sure. Like, that was definitely him going.
That's a fun fact. So Sean Gunn and Taika Waititi were brought into... James Gunn, thank you. Were brought in to write lines for their characters from Ragnarok and Guardians, so that way there would be consistency across the board. Because the Russos had never written Thor before, and they had never written the Guardians before.
I read an article today that said that when they were writing, the writers were writing Infinity War and starting to film, that they hadn't seen Ragnarok yet, and they didn't realize that they went this totally different direction with Thor, so they brought Taika Waititi in to say, hey guys, something changed!
When we're going to start talking about the team-ups, can we all agree that they had so many characters, but the movie actually didn't feel like it was a jumbled mess? Like, I was legitimately worried. I was like, oh man, they got 40 or 50 characters that are going to have actual lines. I was like, this is going to be impossible to follow. And it didn't feel that way.
They split them up. Yeah. And they did it in a good way where there is basically like five groups at any given time. And that was enough to keep them down to four or five significant characters instead of a dozen or more.
It kept the pacing really good, too. I never felt bored. I never felt like it dragged. Those two hours and 45 minutes, however long it was, went by fast.
Yeah, I mean, it's a long movie. Our showtime was 10:30, and we started walking out of the screen room at 1:20.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a long freaking movie.
There were seven or eight trailers, and there's always, like, we saw the Dolby, and there's a 3-minute advertisement for Dolby. So it's not like it was just the movie, but... The storylines weave together very well.
Yeah, I mean, they picked the Russo brothers were the right choice for this movie. Yeah. There's not, I mean, I don't know that there's any directors that would have been able to pull that off as well as they did. Maybe there are, but that's something that's never been done before, and it definitely worked. I mean, it was such a tremendous feat. People look at the Defenders, right? You brought four characters in together that are different. You know, there's one that's more mystical, one that's like a punch-em-up guy, and then a ninja and Private Eye. And that show was not successful.
How did Elektra get the best storyline out of it?
Yeah.
That makes zero sense.
That show was not successful at it, but this movie was able to do 30 characters, maybe, somewhere in there.
We all kind of, like, we adore Joss Whedon, but Age of Ultron was convoluted at times and overstuffed and had a third of the characters that this one does.
Well, they kept them all together. You know, they're, like, in the same room through most of Ultron, you know, versus in this. I mean, the matchups are weird, too. Like, I had some concerns about matching up, you know, the tech-based Iron Man with the mystical-based Doctor Strange.
Oh,
but
no.
That was awesome.
Facial
it was
hair
really
bros
great.
Totally would have gotten to get
Sherlock Bros.
But from a cinematography standpoint, from a tone standpoint, it could be hard putting such different characters together, and it was really well done.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, it's the first time I actually cared about Doctor Strange. I mean, don't get me wrong, I liked him in his movie, I liked him in Thor Ragnarok, but his team up Iron Man, and even Star-Lord a little bit, I'm like, you got three pretty major egos right there.
There was two big standouts on characters for me, and Doctor Strange was definitely one of them. The stuff that he was doing in this movie made it look like child's play, the things that he was doing even at the end of his own solo film. I mean, he's progressed so much, mm-hmm. and I did love his scene in Thor Ragnarok. I was like, this is Doctor Strange, and in this movie, he was so powerful. He did the Crimson Bands of Sitorek at one point, which is mm-hmm. one of the spells. Everybody was like, whoa!
Just like that.
Yeah, they all did that in my theater. But Doctor Strange was definitely one of the two standouts for me. He was
Who was the other?
Thor.
Yeah. I loved Thor.
Yeah.
I think that's fair. I think they were probably my favorites from the movie.
I feel like Thor has gotten better with every single film, and I think it's because in his own first movie, everybody was like, all right, so we don't really know what to do, and everybody's kind of figured it out. It's taken, 8 years for Thor, but it's finally happened.
You need the right directors for all these movies, right? The Russo brothers did it for Captain America.
And they fully admitted that they couldn't do it for everybody, and they needed help. That's why Jon Favreau was an executive producer, and that's why they brought in Gunn and Waititi. So
they're finding the right directors, and they're utilizing
them. It seems like they're letting the actors and actresses use their natural skills, too. Because, I mean, Chris Hemsworth is a charming guy. I mean, even in Star Trek 2009, he's only in there for like 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people left that movie going, I want to see a movie with him. Yeah. I mean, he was only...
No, Tiberius? Awful.
I mean, he's just... Let him be who he is and just make Chris Hemsworth as Thor and let him do what he does. I mean, he's a big dude. He's a good-looking dude. Let him be Thor. And like Ragnarok, they really let it do it, and even more so in this. And now he's... You could almost argue he's like the leader of the Avengers. I mean, they call Iron Man. He's
certainly the most powerful.
Like, finally.
I mean,
yeah,
even probably more so than the Hulk at this point. He's...
Yeah.
Yeah, when he jumped up in the air and the storm clouds were coming behind him, I was like, this is awesome.
Yeah, it was pretty great.
And Stormbreaker, so cool. Right? I love Mjolnir.
I hate that storyline took forever.
Yeah. I loved every second of that storyline.
Yeah. Every second?
Every second of that storyline was gold to me.
Peter Dinklage.
I didn't... listen, everybody in my theater started laughing at just the fact that there was a dwarf playing a giant dwarf, and they couldn't get past that. They laughed anytime he was on screen, there was nothing funny going on, and that annoyed the crap out of me.
That would have annoyed me, too.
But seeing... basically, that whole scene really served the purpose of, like, why is this gauntlet so special?
And well, it shows you how strong Thor is. He took a star.
That too.
I did have a couple issues with that scene. And it wasn't Peter Dinklage, but, like, why... What did encasing his hands in metal even stop him from doing?
Nothing.
All it did was make all of his actions awkward. He was still able to do everything.
But then it's also... This is the one conflict with the movie, because the whole time Thanos is talking about wanting to bring balance and all this.
Mm-hmm.
And even when he's talking to Peter... I'm sorry, Tyrion. It's always going to be Tyrion. Even when he's talking to Peter Dinklage, or Dinklage is recounting when he met Thanos, and Thanos like killed all the rest of the dwarves. So you got 2.5 hours of Thanos going, I believe, balance and balance and balance, but... You, dwarf, I'm going to screw you by encasing your hands in whatever, but then killing all the other dwarves. I'm like...
I didn't have as much of a problem with that, because I feel like Thanos, that was character development for Thanos, because he isn't just a guy that's just killing everything for no reason. Like, we made a deal with Doctor Strange to not kill Tony, and, you know...
He saved Gamora.
Yeah, I mean, there are things he does that are, like... that are rational, and he's not just a mindless killing machine. And right, the Iron Hands didn't really stop anything, but if you're a tradesman or somebody that is used to working with your hands, that's a devastating thing to lose.
Didn't an entire hour of Doctor Strange go by where the guy lost his hands?
Right.
It felt like, so they want to build a Thanos that's very different from the comic books, where he even has some sympathetic aspects to it, and he has loss that he feels, and he's doing something because he thinks it is for the greater good. But nothing about what he does there is for the greater good. That part is out of character for this Thanos. It's actually more in character with the old Thanos.
I think it would have been worse if he killed everybody. So the fact that he left somebody alive, I mean, at least there's something there. He didn't just kill everyone.
Talking about all the stuff they're doing with Thanos, obviously Loki, Tom Hiddleston's always going to be a fan favorite villain.
Yeah.
From the first Avengers. But Thanos with his little sympathetic side, and they almost kind of made him... human in a sense,
mm-hmm.
with his emotions and his feelings and his sadness. I mean, I'll admit, I actually made a note in there when I was rewatching some stuff today. I went into this movie, I didn't really care about Thanos. Right. I'm a Captain America fanboy,
me
I'm
too.
A Bucky Barnes fanboy, all them.
Yeah.
And I'm watching the movie, I'm like, man, I kind of, you know, he's the bad guy, but I kind of like him. I don't like what he's doing, but I like the delivery, I like Brolin's.
Brolin was a standout. He was really great.
Yeah.
And it's about time. He's played this role so many times in just random cameos, and it's good to actually see him come on board. Chat's kind of taken off with Hulk, so maybe we should talk a little bit about
that. Sure, people have problems with Hulk.
And... Hulk was lame.
All right, so let's just get this out of the way. Hulk did not transform after that first scene because of CGI budget constraints, guys. Like, let's be honest. Like,
I don't think that was it.
I do. I think it's a lame storyline with bad delivery.
Well, the fact is none of us work for Marvel, so we don't know where their budget constraints are.
We do know that it did not have the largest budget of any movie ever made, but it was expected to have the largest
return on investment of any
movie ever made. So from that standpoint, as an outsider, I can say if the Pirates of the Caribbean can spend more money on their movies, Marvel could have given this movie more money. That's all I'm going to say.
I guess if you think about it, and I'm sorry, everybody, I'm the guy that brings Star Trek and Game of Thrones and everything. Last season Game of Thrones, they didn't bring in Ghost, and they said all the CGI budget went to the dragons. And they basically, like, you can have Ghost or you can have dragons, so...
And it's time for dragons.
And they have, when HBO's basically got, like, Marvel, unlimited budget. But I didn't realize that the budget for this movie was, like, less than some of the other Marvel
films. Was tied for third place. Two Pirates of the Caribbean movies had larger budgets. It's even possible that BVS had a larger budget. We're not 100% sure on that. But either way, you know, you're talking about a franchise that was just boasting like a month or two ago about how it crossed $14 billion at the box office. You couldn't come up with the extra $10 million it would take to put Hulk in the movie?
I don't know. Maybe they just decided that since this was the first time Hulk has ever gotten his ass kicked, and it was, like, he totally was destroyed, that let's just go with that storyline and Hulk is legitimately scared. But I truly think that it comes down to Hulk is an expensive character, and they had to do four completely new, completely CGI characters in place of one Hulk.
Mouse in chat brings up a good point that I was getting ready to bring up, is that they didn't save any money because the Hulkbuster suit is not practical.
But it is not as expensive as a full mocap.
And it looked bad. No, but
think about it, though.
It did look bad.
There's
it
a lot of shots awful. Of him inside the helmet. It's one of the Iron Man tricks to save money on an Iron Man movie is you show Tony inside the helmet, right? And they did a great, like, they've perfected what the inside of that helmet looks like. They know what they're doing there. But that's not expensive. You put Mark Ruffalo in a 3-foot green screen and then you overlaid some UI on top of it from like a video game, right? Like, it is cheaper to do that than do a mocap Hulk where you have to have somebody acting out everything. They don't do mocap for the Hulkbuster armor. And when they showed Banner when his helmet was ripped off, or even when they showed Rhodey when his helmet was off, the green screen with their heads on their bodies was not good. It wasn't. And if you can't figure that out with Rhodey after 10 years, since he's been in a suit since basically Iron Man 2, you know, it's not because they don't know how to do it. It's that that's where they ran out of their money.
But man, the Black Order sure looked good.
The Black Order looked great, and Thanos looked great.
Proxima Midnight. I want her to have her own movie.
Oh, yeah?
I'm sorry, because when Thanos actually has henchmen, I'm glad you brought up the Black Guard, because the henchmen were almost as powerful as some of the individual Avengers.
Oh, yeah.
Because let's face it, the other movies, all of the henchmen are just...
nobodies.
They're throwaway. I mean, nobody cares. It's because they're throwaway, they pose no threat.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she's fighting at one point like two Avengers at once, including Scarlet Witch, and she's doing pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'm like, that's pretty awesome to have a henchwoman like that. And I'm like, she's cool. Give her her own prequel.
I agree with all that. But Ebony I want to go back to Hulk just for a quick second.
Okay.
Okay. So, first of all, that scene that Rachel mentioned at the beginning was, the first 5 minutes were great for establishing how badass Thanos is.
Absolutely.
The way he whooped Hulk was, like, nothing we've ever seen before. Like, Hulk is the scariest guy on the Avengers, or was until Thor got better. But he got just destroyed, right? Okay. And in chat, Bruce Wayne 25 saying, I'm not buying that Hulk got scared. Hulk has never had his ass kicked like that before.
At least not in the MCU.
Not in the MCU, right.
But which he was losing to Thor in Ragnarok, and Thor only lost because he's got zapped by the taser thing.
Sure.
So he already lost to Thor. So, like...
But he lost in, like, fair fight kind of thing. Thanos hits him, like, 3 times, and then he's down. Thor and him can go at it for hours if they wanted to.
The reason why I bought into the Hulk not hulking out thing partially also is because of some of the stuff Banner said in Ragnarok, where he wasn't sure if he came back from Hulk or if he went into Hulk that, you know, he'd be able to transition the other way. But anymore.
Maybe you're both right, because they could have done a CGI budget issue, which I get, they're still business. But they could have had included the throwaway line like that, where they're like, we need you to be the Hulk. And he's like, you don't understand. I brought this up with you before, Thor.
Yeah.
I'm losing myself to the Hulk if I become the Hulk again. And boom. Like you said, 10 seconds.
Yeah.
He explains what's going on
and
why.
They should have done something like that, if that's the route they were going. If it was budget, I don't care.
Here's the thing. Whatever, may come up with a good story explanation. Because there have been times where budget constraints have created very iconic things. The transporter in Star Trek was a budget issue because they couldn't afford to use the shuttlecraft all the time. Okay? So if this ends up being a great character arc for Banner and or Hulk, because of a budget constraint, then fine.
Ultimately, the issue is Hulk doesn't get his own films to establish this kind of stuff, so they have to sneak in characterizations. And truth be told, I'm happy with the way Banner was portrayed. That man still suited up. He still fought, even though he's completely useless by himself. Yeah. Like, let's just face it. He's always been portrayed as kind of a weakling, and they didn't let him do that. So at least Banner got a good treatment, and hopefully we see a cool Hulk treatment in the next Avengers next year.
In chat, they're yelling at me that that he had the Power Stone. He did have the Power Stone, but every other time he uses any of the stones, he's doing something with his hand. In this case, he was just punching and fighting. So there was not, and he said, "Let him have his fun." So he was. It was.
No. I'm not disagreeing with anything in that scene at all.
No. I was just responding to chat that I don't think he used the Power Stone at all in that scene.
I don't think so either.
As much as I've never been a Loki fangirl. I'm always big, tough, blonde jock and not so much on the emo kid who, you know, has issues.
You're not wrong.
Thank you. But I am very upset with the way he just went out so fast. I wanted him to have a bigger, better death scene. Just something a little more magnanimous.
It's funny because he was in all the interviews where he did Jimmy Kimmel and he did all the press and everything, and he was in the movie for
they did a great job of misdirection, because Hulk as Hulk is in the posters, he's in the trailer, he's in marketing material, so they did a good job of hiding certain things, and that part I appreciate. I don't want to go into the movie knowing what's going to happen, and my biggest gripes from the film are things that I feel were very telegraphed. So the fact that they were able to trick us on a few things I think is positive.
And they did that with Loki. They completely said, he's going to be a right-hand man of Thanos. And I'm like, are you sure? Because he really screwed him over on 2 Infinity Stones so far. So I'm like, are you sure he's going to be? But okay, cool. And then he's just out. He's out in the first 10 minutes. And, you know, I think it's a small disservice to him. But it really did help Thor.
Well, and also, it was, going back to my comment about setting up Thanos as a villain, I mean, what better way than killing off somebody that we've known for multiple movies and, you know, everybody, there's fan clubs for and all kinds of fanfic and all this other stuff out there for, killing him in the first 5 minutes. Yeah, it's not, for Tom Hiddleston, I feel bad for him because he didn't get to do anything, but I mean, that really helped establish Thanos as a character, and they needed that, because all we've seen him do, other than before those first 5 minutes, was sit on a throne and, talk to people.
And I completely appreciate the fact that the fans have really let his character continue, because honestly, his original contract was for 2 movies, Thor and the Avengers. He was supposed to be killed at the end of the Avengers, not be taken back to Asgard. So, you know, the fans have really continued him on, and I think it's, maybe he overstayed his welcome, maybe they were just, you know, bored with the whole flip-flopping between good and evil.
Well, that's the thing, I think at the end of Ragnarok, there's no way he can just become Thanos' right-hand man with any consistency at all. Like, it was starting to borderline on, the Magneto stuff.
When they went to, in Thor Ragnarok, they had him as the right-hand man for the Grandmaster after
But that was different than a guy who wants to kill half the universe.
I mean, it just shows that every time there's a villain, he's going to them and trying to
team up or whatever.
They
couldn't keep doing it. They had to do something else.
He could just be faking his death again.
I suppose.
Except they specifically said, no, you're not coming back this time, or
he did bleed
out
his eyeballs.
The one thing, though, that and this is where Marvel's kind of almost boxing himself into a corner, is because now Thanos has all the Infinity Stones. So with the reality, the time, and Soul Stone, I mean, if there was another power cosmic character out there that was good that got in control of those stones, those three alone, who knows? I mean, everything's kind of going to change, and that's where I think Marvel kind of is, when they're boxing themselves into the corner, I mean, what they should not have done is start announcing more movies. Because they're already announcing, Spider-Man 2 and Black Panther 2 and
Guardians 3.
And Guardians 3. And so it's
And releasing the contract so everybody knows.
That's my least favorite thing that's happened in the movie industry because of cinematic universes, and that's contract information. I don't need to be able to do the math on how many movies Samuel L. Jackson is contracted for to know when he runs out of cameos. I don't need to know that.
Sebastian Stan, they've been telling everybody for like 5 years, oh, he's contractually obligated for 9 films.
Mm-hmm.
And you're doing the basic math, and you're like, so he's up to like 4 with like actual credits? Right. It's like, so, I mean... they could have done something. Remember,
it's just not that interesting, guys. Not for 9 movies.
Not really.
His hair was glorious in this, though.
Yeah.
Seriously. That Wakandan shampoo. Wakandan shampoo.
See, they need a little bit of a sense of humor about some of this stuff. He should be doing, like, a shampoo commercial.
Right, that would be great.
Or something. But no, I think, so, the big problem for me in this movie is who they chose to, quote, kill off. Because they chose to kill off all of their up-and-coming new big stars and leave behind the exact original lineup of the Avengers.
That's for a reason.
I know it's for a reason, but they're the writers, so they can write whatever they want. Everything they write is for a reason, right? But the thing is that it loses so much punch for me. Because I know Black Panther's going to be back. I know Spider-Man's going to be back.
At the very least. Some of the Guardians will be, because there's Guardians 3.
Right, now, you can't just have Rocket and Nebula.
And that's totally a fair criticism for you guys, but I think for the general movie-going public, I mean, they don't follow every single announcement and everything like that. So no. I think for most people, it's going to actually have that impact.
Because of this podcast, because of who we are as fans, we are more plugged in than others. So I'm not blaming Marvel for my lack of emotional reaction to these things.
So here's the thing. I didn't look very hard for this stuff. It showed up on my Facebook feed from major companies like IGN, Kotaku,
and then Screen we talked Rant. About it in our news segment on the podcast. You know, I'm just saying, like,
my point is, I want
to borrow your comment really quick.
Okay,
because the general population, this movie's made like $700 million already. A big bulk of that, you got to admit, is going to be the Marvel fans, the comic book fans, the general movie fans. But could you imagine being that one family that's, like, never seen a superhero movie until now? And they're like,
and that's why I have a hard time saying much about this movie.
Ben Infinity War looks good. Let's go see that. And, you know, like you said, the new Thor, the new Hulk hasn't had his own standalone to build up.
Yeah.
Captain America has, Iron Man has. There's probably people watching this movie.
Or the original Hulk is MCU still. Yeah.
But here's the thing, though. You can't look at Infinity War in a vacuum, because the movie even tells you not to. Right, so if the movie itself is telling me not to look at it in a vacuum, and it's the 19th movie in a cinematic universe that Marvel has told us is a connected cinematic universe, like, I'm not making this stuff up, I'm not searching for it, it is coming to me through normal social media, right? So they've set the expectations, they've set these bars. So when I know that Spider-Man was owned by Sony and had to make a deal with Marvel just to get him in a movie, and now they're running with Tom Holland. I know he's not dead. I know Black Panther, no matter what anyone wants to tell me, there's no way they're not doing a sequel to Black Panther.
So I'm going to pause for a second. Chad is talking about Stallone and the other Ravagers, and the rumor on the street is they're going to be the villains in 3, but Stallone really wants his own film, so Stallone kind of gets what he wants, and the Ravagers could be a standalone film.
I'd watch
especially
that.
If they're planning films all the way out to 2025 into Phase 5. Unpause.
No, that's good. That's huge.
I actually didn't know that.
They could, I mean, in theory, they have enough characters established in the universe to where they could kill these characters off. Shuri was a Black Panther in the comic books. Miles Morales
is unknown at this point.
Miles Morales he's been name dropped basically in the Spider-Man Homecoming movie. The Ravagers, Revengers, or whatever they are in the Guardians of the Galaxy 2, they could be the next Guardians of the Galaxy movie. I mean, that's not going to happen. It's potentially possible.
If Marvel wants to do a live action Miles Morales because Peter Parker's dead and they want Shuri to be Black Panther, then that makes this movie one of the coolest things ever made. I would bet a ton of money that's not.
I'm not saying that's not going to happen. But I'm saying,
but that's my point though, is that like they're not going to like at the end of the day, Marvel's very excited that they are now reaching $15 billion on this franchise that they've put together.
Maybe 16 by the end of it.
Right. Yeah, right. They're not going to just shelve Spider-Man and shelve Black Panther or risk not those sequels not making any money. Right, they're bringing Captain Marvel into this now. They've done all this work to bring these side characters up, like Scarlet Witch, like Falcon and Rhodey, to make them more front and center than they were, 5 years ago. So we know that a lot of these characters, not all of them, but a lot of these characters are coming back. And because there's just going to be this giant reset button, it's hard for me to know who I'm supposed to feel sad about.
Well, I can easily say what I felt sad about and what I didn't. I did not feel sad about most of the characters fading away, since there's a lot of speculation about what the next one's going to be. However, I can say that it was an emotional gut punch when Thanos stabbed Tony, because that is unsure. You can't, they can't keep paying somebody $50 million a movie when it's a huge cut into their entire budget. So when I saw that go into his stomach, I was like, oh, we are done with Robert Downey Jr. here. And that was intense for me. So that was a good moment, in my opinion.
Well, right. But that's kind of ties into what I'm saying. If they had killed off Tony or Cap, that would have been really intense, because they could be done. Both of those actors have talked about moving on to other things. They've been around the longest. They're the old guard who've both kind of left the Avengers sort of at one point or another to do their own thing. They could have been killed off, and I definitely would have felt that.
I actually thought that Thanos was going to kill Captain America. When Captain America grabbed the gauntlet and was pulling it down, I mean, I love Captain America, huge fan. Under no circumstances can he make Thanos move a quarter inch if Thanos doesn't want to. I actually thought Thanos was going to be like, aww. And literally just like, realize that Captain America is one of the leaders and be like, you know what? I'm sorry, but you don't get the faith. And actually just kill him. And, you know, I'm with you, Rachel. And this is going to be bad. This is going to be a little controversial. But when I got back from the movie, my Facebook walls flooded with, oh, I haven't felt this emotional of a movie since, like, Schindler's List. I'm like, oh, my God. I'm like, you guys, you can't compare movies like that. I mean, the emotional...
Well, I talked a little bit about this to Ray. Like, I do get really attached to characters, and I get really emotional watching TV shows and things like that. I've been more emotional watching Scrubs than this movie, right? Because I felt like the characters that did die that might not get reset, like Gamora, for example, was really telegraphed. As soon as Red Skull says anything about how it's a soul for a soul, I'm like, well, she's dead. And it took 3.5-4 minutes before she realized it was going to happen. Like, she doesn't realize that that's what Thanos is going to do. I realized it. It was very telegraphed for me. You know, having Heimdall killed off was really disappointing, but it was so early, so quick, that I guess I didn't connect to it as much as I thought I was going to.
It's sad because Idris Elba has been begging for more.
I know.
And, you know, finally, they just let him go. This lets him out of his contract. He can go be Jon Stewart or James Bond if he wants to.
James Bond would be awesome. Sorry.
Either one would be really cool to watch. Just gonna say. But I feel really bad because it's just not good for him.
And then, you know, it just, some things got a little silly at times. You know, with the Reality Stone was cool. When he used the Reality Stone in Nowhere, was some really cool special effects.
It was nice to see the Reality Stone actually be used to show the reality powers, because honestly, they didn't really do a good job for it in Dark World. It looked like the same as the Space Stone, so... Mm. I liked the effects. I liked the entire Nowhere scene. It was great to see Benicio del Toro back. He is fantastic as the Collector.
You know, all the stuff we've talked about, and it's like you kind of brought up early on, like we have the whole Vision and Scarlet Witch storyline, which was important. But I'm one of those people, it's like they have that budding relationship that kind of started in Civil War.
Yeah.
But it's one of those examples where there's so much stuff happening, we're expected to know stuff that we're told and not seen. And they don't get a chance to really build their relationship much, mm-hmm. aside from they obviously have something.
Yeah.
Which definitely adds to the emotional impact of what's going on with those two later on. But again, it would have been... I kind of wish they would have had a little bit more of just about that.
I would have loved a deeper emotional connection for that, to be completely honest. Because the stuff in the comics is just intense. They barely even tapped it. But that death scene was so violent, and it was pretty heartbreaking to watch. I think they're still missing the Scarlet Witch mental breakdown where she just makes brains melt out of noses, but...
Might be a little graphic for PG-13.
That would have been the moment to do it, to be honest, because, you know, she watched her brother, or she felt her brother die, and then she watched, you know, she had to kill him first, and then she watched him get brought back, only to see its brain ripped out. So
see, and then
it was pretty intense, and she could have had an intense, like, moment. Nothing.
Well, who would she have killed? Thanos was the only bad guy there.
No more Thanos.
Yeah, I don't think that was gonna happen, but I think one of my problem, my similar problem with Vision is that the entire movie he is just getting his ass beat, and so he's every so time powerful. There's another scene with him, like, well, this is the one where he dies. All right, well, I guess it's this one is the one where he dies. So by the time he finally died, it had been two and a half hours of me just like, yeah, it's gonna happen at some point in the movie, and it was just a matter of when. You know, and I think that's where my problem really comes in, is I wasn't surprised by any of it.
Well, and in a movie like this, you just brought up them getting their asses kicked. It's just what happened. It's like Falcon, and as much as I love Black Widow, the characters like that that don't have some sort of true superpower are so limited in a movie. Like, because you can't, Falcon's not going to go up to, you know, to Proxima Midnight and fight her in hand-to-hand combat.
But Black Widow did, and it was weird.
Especially because they just showed, like, well, yeah, because they showed like 5 minutes of earlier Captain America getting schooled almost, and she's, which is fine, maybe because Scarlet Witch was there, but it's kind of, it is kind of hard, and that's why when people are like, oh, there's no Hawkeye, there's no this, I'm like, well, I'm, you know, he's not going to fire an arrow at Thanos. I mean, it's, even I admit that would have been kind of weird.
Yeah.
I mean, Legolas, maybe. that crossover with Wonder Woman against Thanos, I would watch.
Yeah, okay. Ryan, you've been quiet now for a few
just
minutes.
Just letting you complain about all this stuff. So I have a question for you. This is a similar question I asked to Rachel before BVS came out, because she didn't like Man of Steel, and because of like the major destruction and all this stuff and Superman not caring about it, and I asked if that was Batman's motivation in Batman v Superman, if that would retroactively make Man of Steel a little bit better movie for her. And it, I think she said it did.
Yeah.
So if in the next one, part two, even though they're not
whatever
calling
they call
it that,
it, yeah.
If all the original Avengers end up sacrificing themselves, because that's essentially what they're setting it up for, to save all the new Avengers, would that make this movie retroactively better for you?
Absolutely. I think this movie should have come out pretty close to the next one. Maybe it should have come out in November, and the next one we see is Captain Marvel, then Avengers 4. I believe I'm going to love this movie back to back with the next one. Right now, it's not that I don't dislike it. It's that I feel so much is open-ended and I want closure.
I like it a hell of a lot more than Ultron.
Yeah.
I mean, this, I didn't think this was a bad movie at all. I think it had bad moments, but I liked it way more than Last Jedi. And I didn't really, well, I didn't really care for Last Jedi. But I was going to, like,
yeah, I liked it better than Last Jedi.
Well, I mean, I do like what they're doing with the potential sacrifice, but what I don't know is, I don't know how Captain Marvel's going to play into all this. I do think Captain Marvel, her movie's going to do great, I think. I think she's one of the people that can maybe rip his gauntlet off. She's one of the few left.
I'm really worried when I, basically at the end, when you see the pager and everything go off, I was really worried that it was going to be a Justice League syndrome, where they got Superman back now, and so he can do everything by himself and the rest of the league does nothing. And I don't think Marvel's going to go that route, but I worry slightly that they are, that they're going to, like, there's always that thought because of Justice League in the back of my mind that maybe Captain Marvel is just going to, like, come in and Superman the day.
Oh, I hate that so much.
Yeah, right? Like, I mean, I don't think it's going
to
happen.
So to answer your question, it's absolutely possible that whatever happens in Avengers 4 retroactively makes this a better movie. That's absolutely fine.
So that's what I was asking, though. Would this make it a better movie for you? Because it's going to happen. They're all going to die in the next one.
Well, that's the thing, right? So it depends. What do they do in Avengers 4? Like, yeah, they keep saying that people are going to die. Maybe that's true. Maybe it's not true. We don't really know at this point, right?
There's a huge, huge chance that we're gonna, like, there's a reason why they left the original Avengers standing, every single one of them.
Yeah, because they're gonna sacrifice themselves to set up for the new Avengers, mm-hmm. and they're gonna,
and if that's what they do, you know, and they do it well, then great, you know. But the problem is that they decided to do it as two movies released a year apart, which we've had sequels released closer together before, not necessarily great movies like the second and third Matrix movies, but it's happened. So I have a year now to think about it. And if you wanted me to be emotional, if you wanted me to feel the loss of the movie, that just didn't happen, because I don't know what Avengers 4 is necessarily going to bring, but I have a pretty good idea that most of the characters that they killed off are not going to stay dead.
No, but the ones that we care about, there's a reason why the ones that we care about are the ones that are left.
Well, no, wait, hang on. I cared about the ones that they killed off. Like, I loved Doctor Strange and Black Panther, and I really love Guardians of the Galaxy. So they killed off a lot of my favorite characters. They left the original characters, and sure. I get that
the
that
ones
was
that we've
on
had the most movie development with is what I should have said, because they're not everybody has different favorite characters, obviously. Okay. So the ones that have had the most experience with are left, and that's because of that. There's going to be more of an impact. I feel like if they killed off Black Panther. Okay, that would suck for them because they lose a lot of money, and also because we didn't get much development in that. But, you know, if Captain America, even if you don't like Captain America, he's had 3 movies worth of development, not including the cameos and other, and, you know,
Avengers the two
movies.
Avengers movies.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's, you know, when he dies, it's going to be impactful because he's going to die. And they, like, we know the contracts. This is the other side of this contract thing. Is we know that Chris Evans wants to go on and do directing. And we know that his contract is up with the next movie. And we know that Iron Man's contract is up with the next movie. And, you know, there's going to be something.
This has been foreshadowed since his first movie when he jumped on that grenade. He is the guy to sacrifice
himself.
He's
going to get the scene that I posted on my Facebook friend, which you probably aren't if you're watching this later. But I posted the scene from the comic books where Cap is literally standing face-to-face with Thanos. And said, as long as there's one man standing in front of you, you can't win this war, or something along those lines. And, you know, I'm guessing right after that, Thanos is going to kill him in a very emotional scene. But I'm betting that's such an iconic scene, and one that would translate really well, that's probably going to happen. Obviously, we don't know. And I can't judge the movie based off something that might happen.
Well, that's my problem, right? Is that I truly hope that Avengers 4 is everything that we think it's going to be. And then if you were to watch these two together as one film, it creates this one incredible epic. That may be.
Like, it's a lot more fun watching the 3 Lord of the Rings movies now that they're all together and you don't have to wait a year. So that's just it. I don't want to wait this year. I want to have closure now. I want one fulfilling saga instead of 2 broken pieces. And next year, I will see this movie again in theaters right before I see Avengers 4.
Yeah, they'll
4.
Do it too.
Well, I will do that at the very least.
There's a comment in chat I just saw about Spider-Man, you know, in Tony's arms at the end. I gotta admit that. Actually,
that was a little emotional.
Of all the ones that were fading, that was the one I was like, oh man, I actually... aside from the fact Tom Holland can act and Robert Downey Jr. genuinely looked upset.
Yeah.
They're good actors.
They are. I mean,
I don't
really want to
say anything about that.
Spider-Man had, you know, I think that because everybody else just kind of fades in realizing what's going on, Spider-Man, they actually kind of showed that his Spidey sense was telling him, okay.
That's a big thing for the Russos. They really wanted to do that.
And they didn't do that. We touched on that when we did our Homecoming review, that there was no Spider sense and it was a little weird, but.
That's why, though, I actually found it to be a little forced. Like, they're great actors. They did exactly what they needed to do in that scene with the material that they were given. But I thought it was way too convenient that the one kid who was doing way more than he ever should have done is the one person who has to go through, like, the painful death that nobody else had.
This whole time, I was like, what, man, why did they pair him up with Tony? This is the same thing in Homecoming. It was because of that scene. It was because that scene doesn't hold the same emotional gravitas that it did if he was paired up with anybody else.
Well, I think Spidey, I mean, Peter, Peter Parker.
You'll give it eventually.
Peter Parker has a very, you know, big connection with Tony, a father figure connection. That's a big part of Spider-Man Homecoming, you know, and the way they get together in Civil War. So I'm not shocked at all that they were paired up in this, even though it might have been similar to a previous film. But I felt like if the idea that Thanos came up with was that this was mercy because nobody was supposed to feel anything. You just ceased to exist, right? Well, that's not what happened, and it didn't happen to the one kid.
But that because he has powers.
I know
it's part of his power set.
That we've explained outside of the movie.
No, because it happens earlier in the movie when his hair's hanging up
on it. Hang on.
Jordan Blooded's banned.
Why? Oh, he finally gets to be with Uncle Ben. Ow.
Unacceptable.
That is rough, man. Look, yes, his hairs rise on the bus when the giant spaceship shows up. That and what happened at the end when he dies, I think, are not necessarily the same thing. And the leap we're making is because some people wrote an article about it and people like how it sounds. That's not said in the movie in any way. It's an extension of his character outside of the MCU.
I have a feeling you're probably on the same page as me. But
the other 5 don't count.
not in the universe, but it shows the power set of Spider-Man. I don't think they needed to add another 5 minutes to go, oh, guys, no, I have a Spidey sense.
It's a different Spider-Man.
Okay.
Okay, and did he use the Spidey sense really in this movie?
I mean, he had the hair stamp.
Yeah, but other than the goosebumps.
Potentially. Like, I don't know. I wasn't really watching for it, to be honest with you. But well, anyway, so, Rachel, sorry, okay. You were saying something.
No,
I interrupted
it's all good. I have a feeling you're going to be on the same page, but you may not. Who knows? Spidey's death got me because it was almost word for word Ten's speech when he regenerated.
Yeah, it was the Doctor Who. It was the Doctor Who's end sentence. I don't know.
Almost.
Yeah, I mean, it was
word for word.
I got an entire Doctor Who sleeve, so I completely, like, the moment he said it, I was like, this is David Tennant.
Yeah.
And I mean, I remember that got me kind of emotional.
I looked at him and I was like, man, two wounds with one piece of salt. That sucks. Like,
and you know, the one complaint you guys heard me griping about this earlier, it's the 30-second gripe. It's just about the whole battle in Wakanda. Because
I had the same problem with that.
You know, the joke I made earlier, it's the battle on Naboo of episode 1 with the Gungans, because they have the blue shield wall and I can hear Vikings screaming, you know, shield wall, and they locked their shields, which looked it looked amazing on film. They did a great job. But at the same time, I'm like, man, you know, an artillery gun right now would be extremely useful.
Or a couple of Jedi.
I mean, like, they could, and I know it's a comic book movie. I know I'm kind of nitpicking, but I'm like, man, I know Wakanda has this stuff.
They had weapons.
They had the spaceship flying things, and those had guns, because at the end of Black Panther, you know, when Bilbo is flying away.
Hold on, Bucky had a gun, okay?
Bucky did have a gun.
And also, I'm sure the Hulkbuster had guns. It's just weird that, like, he decided to punch people or whatever.
Where were the armored rhinos?
I love that War Machine was dropping bombs, because
Falcon did too, didn't he?
Yeah. As soon as I saw that at the end, I was like, that's what I would do if I was playing this video game. I just dropped these bombs.
Yeah.
It was a weird scene, because, yeah, they didn't have the giant rhinos that were already established in Black Panther, and maybe this had to do with
the
movies.
That's CGI, too.
It is CGI, too. You didn't have the plane things that were shown to have weapons in Black Panther. Like, we saw this movie a couple months ago, and they're already missing technology.
That's also because Ryan Coogler wasn't brought on some of the other directors.
Do you think it's possible nobody knew how good Black Panther was going to be?
I mean, that's a possibility. They also maybe didn't necessarily know the details of the giant rhinos because the movie was being made basically at the same time.
Good point.
Right? And that's the risk of trying to pump out 3 movies a year, is they're going to overlap with each other. And when the characters cross over, you're going to miss stuff.
Yeah, I agree.
But basically, you had just another faceless army for them to fight, just like the Chitauri, which, I mean, I guess you have to give something for the other non-main characters to do, you know, but yeah, they were just basically, it was the Chitauri again without their little flying motorcycles.
And with extra arms,
yeah. Yeah, exactly.
It's just funny because it's like, the reason I bring up Naboo is because the whole wet battle, the whole shield, they're trying to stop them from getting the vision so they can do a thing. And in Naboo, it's the army's fighting to create a distraction for Padme to go do a thing. And I'm like, this 5 second.
You're making this worse for me. I just want
to... Well, here's the thing. I love this. I love this movie, and I'm one of those people, I can find a minor gripe about anything. But what I do love so much about Marvel, and we've been hearing this for like 5 days now, Marvel has now started doing dark and gritty better than DC.
Yes.
But they're doing it in a way that people want to come back and watch the next. We all want to go see the next one.
Of course.
It's like Justice League 2, and it's like Steppenwolf Returns. I'm like, I just don't care. But it's not. I know Justice League 2 is not Steppenwolf again. I hope not.
I'm like
Ray though, because I want to see Part 2 so bad that next year when they bring them both back out in the theaters again, I'm gonna go for 6 hours and just watch Avengers.
Yeah,
I don't necessarily think the MCU has a bad movie in its 19 films. There are some that are obviously not as good as others.
There are only a few pieces of MCU content that I think is bad as a whole, and that's Inhumans and Iron Fist, and everything else has been, you know, from mediocre to amazing. So, hey, if you have some plot holes, cool. If you have some small mistakes, cool. If you have some slip-ups, I will forgive you. I am thousands of dollars invested in you at this time.
Well, right. I just, for me, perspective is important. And I don't want everyone just to say, because it had the most characters in it and because it was the biggest, that it's automatically the best of the MCU. Because I'm not sure that that is accurate. I do think it's a good movie. I don't think it's bad. When we do our little letter rating at the end, maybe you'll be surprised. But, you know, I think that it could have been better. And I think that what they tried to do was just set up the next film. And that was a job that they had to complete but at the risk of, you know, not having the same emotional punch for somebody like me who has seen all 19 films and most of them more than once, you know, except for Ragnarok and Homecoming, since they haven't done streaming services yet.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's fair to say that if you look at Disney and Marvel, and Ryan, you were kind of talking about this earlier, or before we even started, as a business, their main interest, and this is not a bad thing for business, they want to make money.
Right.
And Disney, as much as they defended Last Jedi, the one thing that, you know, Disney didn't like is that Last Jedi was so polarizing.
Mm-hmm.
People loved it or people hated it. Disney doesn't want that. Disney wants people to be... They want their mediocre to be better than good that other movies achieve. And that's something Disney and Marvel have always tried to do. And that's... Like, Winter Soldier, when people are talking about the movie Winter Soldier, that's universally regarded as, like, one of the top three comedy films.
Superhero
movies of all time. I mean, it's because of how great the characters and the interaction was. And that's something Disney and Marvel, they want to make... They make their money off those popcorn audiences. The people that are going to go see it, and maybe they're not invested entirely like we are, but that's where a huge amount of money is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're absolutely right. And it's one of those things where I've been following this for 10 years. You know, I saw the first Iron Man in theaters, and I've got the first two phase box sets, and I bought some of the movies in those sets multiple times as I went from DVD to Blu-ray and, you know, all of that stuff. So, you know, I want these movies to be great. I want them to be the best thing that I see because I spend the most money on this franchise.
Here's how I think we should finish out. There's a lot of small things that we didn't get to touch on. Maybe things that were just very impressive, small moments. Like, maybe we should just go around and talk about a few of the things that we really liked. And, you know, I'll just start it off. Like, that scene with Nebula being tortured, it was so visually impressive.
Yes.
It looked as painful as she made it feel. And, like, Gamora doing the hero thing and showing him the soul stone on Boromir to save her was like that scene, maybe one of my favorites from the whole thing. It was just really cool.
That's fair. I think for me, it's when Groot cuts his arm off to help finish the axe for Thor. I thought that was really, really cool because, you know, Groot hasn't really been quite the same since the original Groot died in the first Guardians movie. And, you know, little baby Groot was cute and everything, but I was ready to see Groot actually contribute on, like, a legitimate level. And to see, you know, he's the teenager and he's playing his video games and stuff like that was like, yeah, I get it. He's the teenager who doesn't want anything to do with anybody. But I like that he bonded with Thor. You know, Thor had the respect of his people. He could speak the language and all of that. And that kind of sacrifice, so to speak, I just thought was really cool in the moment.
And they did have a throwback to him from the original Guardians movie where he ran through three guys with the arm and, like, swung them around. He did that again in this movie. There was a lot of little things like that that were set up, you know, years ago, mm-hmm. and they cashed in on this movie. Maybe a little controversial, but I really liked the Red Skull Soul Stone scene, and maybe it didn't impact you when Gamora died. Or whatever complaint there is about that scene, but seeing Red Skull again was cool. I'm a big fan of the first Avenger, despite the CG problems and some of the other stuff going on in it. And seeing him again was really neat, and even though it didn't really have that much significance that it was him doing it, other than, hey guys, look who we got. But going past that and seeing Thanos' reaction to realizing he was going to have to sacrifice his daughter and actually shedding a tear... was great. And
how do you think about Hugo Weaving's replacement, Ross Marquez?
From The Walking Dead? When we walked out, I was like, that was not Hugo Weaving. Because it was not a great impression, I didn't think. Because he was obviously trying to do it. But it was fine. It was fine. I kind of wish they had just gone a totally different route and said that when he got transported and was on a different planet with the whatever atmosphere that his lungs were screwed up and his voice sounded different or something. They don't even have to explain it. But if his voice had been different, it would have been fine for me.
It was great. It was almost like he was trying to be Hugo Weaving being German.
Yeah. Right? Yes. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I really thought that scene was good for establishing Thanos' character as more of a sympathetic villain, and also just seeing Red Skull. And I liked his cape thing, his hood, torn up hood and everything was neat. Yeah.
Greg?
Two are tied for my favorite. It was the Doctor Strange when he's doing his little head freak out because he's looking through all the different potential scenarios.
Yeah, that was cool. I love Doctor Strange and that whole scene. It's, was great.
And they ask him, like, is there any scene, any opportunity or scenario where we win? He's like, yeah, just one. Because it gives the whole, why does he give up his stone? It
gives and that, why does he let Star-Lord act like an idiot? And why do all these things happen? Yeah.
It's either for a reason, or it's because, you know, in the end, he chose the moral compass high ground. He wanted to save, he wanted to play the hero role as opposed to the protector. And you know what? Either way they go with it, I'm going to be on board because I loved his character in this.
I'd like to think that it's because he thinks this is the only route to the one, because he says, you know, we're in the end game now.
Yeah.
So it's he, this, from that line, it sounds like that's what he needed it to be.
Yeah, and everybody's like, Star-Lord's an idiot, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, but we know Star-Lord's an idiot since he was first introduced. Well, that's not a new character trait.
With him, and he's like, mimicking Thor. Like, dude's an idiot.
Yeah. I did have a bit of a problem with
his facial hair. Me too. Well, it was very off-putting.
So one of my biggest gripes with Guardians 2 is how they win. And they win because his dad, Ego, says some stuff that if he just shut his mouth, he gets to win the day. But he says a couple of really dumb things, and Peter gets mad. Literally the exact same thing happens.
It's a family trait.
It's a family, right. No, you're totally right. Yeah. But for me, I'm like, really?
But why is that a problem if it's something that makes sense in the context of the character?
I didn't like it in Guardians 2. So to see it again when the stakes are even like higher.
But it makes sense like, still. Even if you didn't like it.
Well, see, it didn't make sense to me because you'd think...
No, he gets mad when people kill his girls. Like, I think that is character consistency.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Fine. Before the podcast, Ray agreed with me on this, so I just want to point that out.
She's got other discussion points now.
You guys' opinions all changed. No,
the second one for me was how sympathetic they made Thanos, because I was actually writing over the weekend, and this will not happen. I guarantee it won't happen, but it's a cool idea. I was thinking that what's going to happen in part two is somehow Captain Marvel beats the hell out of Thanos so much. Doesn't kill him.
I'm already out.
Kill him or doesn't hurt him. But she defeats him to the point where he somehow sacrifices himself and resets the timeline. Because she reminds him of what he did to Gamora.
I think the fact that he had to sacrifice Gamora is going to play a role in him, you know.
That wouldn't have had an effect if they hadn't introduced little young Gamora, who is so cute.
There is
Thanos
a possibility.
Thanos himself. That's there, like his... Yeah. So I have a feeling that that's how this is going
to
play out.
Well, if they bring Gamora back, maybe he can't bring himself to do it again.
Yeah, that's maybe. Possible. I mean, I still have the theory that all these characters aren't dead. Because, we've seen... similar effects happening. They're trapped in the Soul Stone or something like that. Because we saw a dead body with her, so maybe she is actually dead.
Yeah,
but everybody else fading.
Her, Heimdall, and Loki, I'm pretty sure, are
dead.
That's fine.
And Vision, right.
I'm kind of sad about Vision.
But, I am too. He was such a powerhouse. Yeah.
And it was a horrible death to watch.
Sad about Gamora and Heimdall. I mean, those are cool characters too. But
I just feel like Vision wasn't like he was a side character in everything he did. He didn't really get the, and so is Heimdall, I guess. But
yeah, no, I guess we'll have to wait and see. I'm curious how far back things get reset when they do get reset.
Well, if you've been following set pictures that release, then you already know how far back it gets reset. At least you know part of the path,
and that's because you're plugged in.
Exactly. I'm not letting that bother me.
But I haven't even seen that because I'm not looking. If it gets posted on my feed, it's posted on my feed. But I'm not trying to find out. Spoilers.
I'm not accusing you of anything like that.
My point is, though, it's that's where I'm coming from. Is I just see what's in the normal media. I'm not looking for leaked stuff, and I'm not trying to find things I'm not supposed to find.
Do you think James Cameron's really happy that Gamora died, so now he can have Zoe Saldana back for his space dances?
Avatar 2, 3, and 4. So I do, before we stop, I do kind of want to go over the characters that we don't know where they are at this particular point.
There are some unknowns.
So we have, our list here, and it's not, let's see, I think we're missing a couple of people on that list, but that's okay.
This is just what we wrote down ahead of time. So Hawkeye, Wong, Ant-Man, Wasp, Shuri,
Coulson.
We have zero idea if this is actually going to affect the TV.
There has been an episode of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. since Infinity War, and they did say something about, like, did you hear what happened to Wakanda? So I assume that the show is still, which is weird because there weren't any members of the show that got vaporized.
Well, so maybe that's because their show's continuing on the timeline that's fixed after everything's reset.
Maybe.
Ooh.
I don't know. That would be kind of a lame cop-out.
Yeah, I agree. I'm just kidding. Yeah.
I'm still not sure that that's what's going to happen, that it's going to be a reset. We don't, it could be quite a few other things, like Ryan said.
Sure. Whatever frame term you want to use to say that the people who died aren't really dead. I mean, you don't want to call it a reset. Don't call it a reset. Call it a revival. I don't. Whatever that is.
Resurrection.
Yeah. Yeah. Avengers Resurrection. That's the name of the fourth movie.
I feel call like, it Revengers. And
I feel like it's safe to say that Xandar has. It said it was decimated, so probably safe to say that Glenn Close and John C. Reilly is dead.
Right, probably.
I do think they just said in chat that wasn't Wong at the Sanctum Sanctorum, and which is, that's. I mean, we do know that he was headed there, but yeah. We don't know what happened
after. We don't know if he's alive. Yeah. Right. Yeah. We're mainly talking about whether or not these characters still, quote, exist or not at this point to team up with the original Avengers in the next movie. Mm-hmm. We don't necessarily know that Captain Marvel survived that either. I'm sure she did, but we don't really know that she did necessarily.
You're right, because this affected the entire universe, so yeah. This was not just our planet.
And I gotta say, I gotta give credit to the creators of the film, like the little technical people, because they even had that helicopter crash at the end.
Yeah.
Because I was thinking about it, I was like, man, so for half the people, I'm like...
In the car crash.
You know, Homer Simpson's watching a nuclear power plant somewhere and just evaporates, and it's like, well...
That can only be a good thing
for Springfield. Well, I mean, stuff like that shows that they're paying attention. Like, you mentioned the Matrix movies before.
Yeah.
Remember in the first Matrix when they're fighting on the rooftop and their agent's dodging all the bullets, mm-hmm. and none of the windows behind them are getting shot out? I'm that's what this movie avoids, is stuff like that, because you may not realize yourself, but your brain did.
Yeah.
And then you think about it a couple minutes later, and you're like, man, why'd the helicopter crash? Oh, the pilot evaporated.
I thought the post-credit scene was actually pretty good. Oh, yeah. Considering, I thought it was a little sad that both of them evaporated, since that was their only role in the entire film. I was hoping one of them might show up in Avengers 4, but...
I'm kind of annoyed that, like, Fury just carries around this 1990s pager on him all the time.
It's a space pager.
Yeah, in case, like, why didn't he use this pager when, like,
aliens were coming
through the portal in New York?
But that's the problem with the cinematic universe. There's the same problem in Thor: The Dark World. London is being destroyed, and the Avengers are just, like, catching a movie?
Yeah.
Like, you know, where are they?
He had this pager the whole time.
Shawarma, right, they're just getting shawarma, right? Like, that's the problem when you have this, is once you do the team-up, you have to, like, why are you not...
I get it that she's probably, like, not on Earth.
Yeah.
But, I mean, still, she could have flown to, you know, Earth and...
She better have a line that's like, man, you better not get me unless it's really important.
In the movie, yeah, they probably will at the very end be like, this has got to be cosmic destruction level stuff.
But speaking of space, it reminded me of the title screens where they showed the locations.
Yeah, that was great. One just said space.
Just space.
Yeah.
I gotta tell you, if you watched the movie and that was your cue, maybe this isn't for you.
I mean,
that's where they are.
Yeah, the Russo brothers don't do that exactly in every movie, but they do big title screens in a lot of their stuff.
I'm just glad they were smaller than Civil War, because those were awful. Yeah,
they were still a little big. Like, I don't understand why in Civil War and this, they can't just put the location in the bottom left like a normal movie. I don't understand why that has to be.
They could have just had 8 years later on the bottom.
By the way, I do want to point out that my griping about that was valid, because they retconned it in this movie.
Yeah, clearly, because Derek writes, they retconned
it. I didn't say
it.
I said valid.
The Russos hated it. Feige kept making excuses like, nah, I mean, if you think about it, and the Russos were like, no, it's wrong.
And I appreciate that, because, like I said, they've put 19 movies into this. Continuity is supposed to be a thing, because that's what they want it to be. So I'm glad that they retconned it. They saw that it was important. So.
I don't think any of us argued with you that it was, that it was.
I'll have to go back and listen to the episode.
I don't think you're going to do that. No, but
he will do that just to be right.
Just to spite us.
Chat just goes, Cleveland. Like, I laughed so hard.
Why did you put an extra A in Cleveland, C. Will Royce?
Like, oh, it's just a typo.
Like cleavage land.
Look, us Ohioans don't know how to spell our own Cleveland, okay? You gotta give us credit.
It's a tough one. Alright, so
I forgot about that in Civil War. Yeah. The massive
giant.
And now that I think about it, I'm like, man, that's...
Like, they were, like, half the size, so maybe they just keep shrinking them by half. Eventually, they'll be normal size.
Yeah, or those Thanos will snap them out of existence, I'm sure.
There you go.
I can only hope.
You can only hope. Yeah.
No, those survived.
Oh, no! Half of them.
Now, there have been some talks, you know, about where some of these other characters might be, and there are some people saying that Valkyrie did survive.
Even though we wouldn't know, because she wasn't in the movie at all.
And even though we have no idea where she would be.
We have no idea. Or Korg.
Where's Korg? I mean, they're not going to kill him off, because he's a fan favorite.
So now I'm drawing a blank on who says. I can't remember if it was Feige or one of the Russos, but one of them was saying that Valkyrie did escape with, like, escape pods or something and the remaining Asgardians, but that now's not the time to talk about Korg. That's a paraphrase, but... so that was somebody official from Marvel who was saying it. It wasn't just some random rumor.
We have no idea if Pepper Potts...
Oh, Pepper.
Korg would have been a weird one in this movie. Right? I would have loved it because I love Korg so much. But yeah, it would have been a weird thing.
I know Gwyneth Paltrow and Pepper Potts are kind of polarizing for fans. But the one thing I actually think she's survived, and this is just because I'm... This is the way my brain unfortunately works. That whole pregnancy talk. Yeah. What if it turns out in the next movie she actually is pregnant, and that's when Tony Stark...
He sacrifices himself,
and he's like, do I save the Avengers, or do I try to stay alive for my future kid? Actually give Robert Downey Jr., because the man can't act.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, we've seen him do it. Give him a true emotional outburst scene where he's sacrificing himself and Pepper Potts. Like, oh, by the way, Tony, you're dying. But it's twins, and I'm going to name one Tony, and one after your father. I mean,
Pepper something. Spoiled herself. Gwyneth Paltrow said that she suits up in Avengers 4.
Yeah.
On Stephen Colbert.
I mean, she suited up in Iron Man 3, so...
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's gonna be Rescue again.
Okay. That's fine. all the Iron Man tech people lived, so, yeah. You know.
It's true.
Yeah, lots of suits everywhere, I'm sure.
I actually didn't listen to anything you guys were saying, because after we started talking about Korg, I just want Korg to hand Thanos a pamphlet and try and recruit him for the Revolution.
God. All right, so
that's all I want now.
It somehow works. Right? Thanos is like, my whole life has been a lie.
There's a ton of little moments that I am dying for.
Somebody write that fan fiction for me, please.
I want Valkyrie, Black Widow, Okoye, and Gamora to like swap fighting styles. And I want an entire 2-hour film with Benicio del Toro and Jeff Goldblum talking in character. Like, that's all I want.
Well, yeah, that's
just
gotta
happen. You named three pretty badass ones. I just thought about this. Four, yeah. Where's Van Camp? Agent 13.
Nobody cares. Like,
yeah, I guess she disappeared after Winter Soldier.
But I was just thinking, well, yeah, because...
Oh, she's in Civil War.
Yeah, Civil War.
She's in Civil War.
She's doing big things with Captain America. I mean, something tells me he knows, or she knows where he was the whole time.
Oh, did General Ross survive?
No one cares.
I mean...
Unless
he turns into Red Hulk.
Yeah,
I was going to say, there's a reason it could matter. Rolk,
then...
Rolk.
They call him Rolk.
Do they really?
Yeah.
That's great.
Just like they call She-Hulk Shulky for short.
Cute.
Yeah.
That's cute.
That's shorter than She-Hulk?
No, it's not.
It doesn't seem that much shorter.
It's still two syllables, guys.
Maybe Valkyrie's going to become She-Hulk. Some sort of weird mix of Asgardian.
That'd be too weird. I don't know if I can do
that. Oh, that'd be amazing.
Let her be Valkyrie and put somebody else as She-Hulk.
She can be She-Hulk in Valkyrie armor.
I mean, that'd be kind of cool.
Her and the last four Asgardians that somehow survived.
Yeah. There we go. Again, another... The poor Asgardians. It's like one apocalypse to another apocalypse. I'm like, man, the universe... You guys just need to give up.
When Thor was, like, dumping all of his drama on there, I was like, man, you've had it the worst, haven't you? Yes,
he really has.
Also, that was a nice setup for Rocket, because he says, I've got so many things going for me, and then at the end he gets everything taken away, and it's just him and Mantis, I think, that are the last two left.
Nebula.
No, Mantis is gone, it's Nebula.
And Nebula are the last two left.
And they hate each other.
Yeah.
There was a lot of foreshadowing, you know, Rocket talking about how he's the captain, and now he basically is the leader of the
Guardians. I will say, I completely hated that they alluded to the snap, like, 17 times throughout the movie.
And they kept saying, I could just snap he could just snap.
In the trailer, it was cool, because it's like, they might do the snap! And then in the movie, it's like, oh, he could snap, and then another person like, oh, all he needs is a snap, and then, you know, snap into a Slim Jim!
I think it wasn't supposed to be... I don't think the fact that he was going to snap was supposed to be the surprise.
Right.
And I think, to your earlier points when we talked about the movie pre-release, was that I actually think the movie might have been stronger if it had ended on the snap.
Yeah, because like then, what I said, and then yeah, not do any post-credit
scene. Except the sunset?
Yeah.
Like, the sunset like, was weird.
Well, and just not showing everybody's face.
Yeah, don't show everyone, because then you don't know. Yeah. You have no idea who survived.
Oh,
and now the
think about it, though.
That in Avengers 4, you have the big poster with everybody still on it, and the movie starts, and now you know who's still alive, and you're like, holy shit, and you have to deal with it in that movie right there and then. It adds, what, 10 minutes to the movie?
No, I
that's
still
upsetting.
And, I mean,
I hate the
I do remember talking about that, and I feel like that would have been better, but I don't think general audiences would have really been very receptive to that.
Empire Strikes Back. Down notes are good for sequels.
Oh, this was still a down note.
But it's a different kind of down note. It's a very specific down note of what everything I've explained. I don't want to rehash all of it, right?
No, I know.
But if you ended it earlier, if you ended it on the snap, You know, you ended on that, like, on that line, you should have gone for my head, and then he does the snap, and that's it. You go to black. I mean, tell me you're not going to go see Avengers 4. Scene. No, they didn't want to do a post-credit scene, right? The Russos didn't want one. So that's exactly what you do. You cut straight to black. You do the same title card that they had. No post-credit scene that the Russos didn't even want to have. And then Avengers 4. Tell me you would not want to go see that.
No, I mean, we pitched that before. Said that, you know, that would be great before that the movie even came out. So
I was actually hoping that after they said the word snap like 800 times that he was going to like mariachi clap.
Yeah, exactly.
Because like, it could have been anything. Like, he could have done the Macarena.
And maybe they just put his hand into a second gauntlet so that he gets a nice metal clang whenever he does the
clap. Maybe like the glove just doesn't bend quite right. Right.
That is the best cosplay armor ever. If you can snap your fingers, I will tell you that.
Make it even more generic than that. Like, have him go, have everybody start evaporating, and people are like looking at Thanos, and they're like, and Thanos is like, what? He's like, you didn't snap your fingers. And Thanos is like,
Why would I need to snap?
Yeah.
Why would I need to snap my fingers? Then he just disappears. And then the sunset scene. I know we're kind of running out of time.
No, that's fine. Whatever.
The sunset scene with Thanos is sitting there, and he's like looking on the sunset, and you can see that he thinks. That's the weird thing about this villain compared to all the other Marvel villains. Well, not all of them, but most of them. He thinks what he's doing is a good thing.
Which is the sign of a good villain.
Which is the sign of a great villain. Yeah. You're right.
He's an okay villain. Loki. Here's the problem is his thing is temporary.
Yeah.
He only killed off half of the people, right? Well, they're going to continue to reproduce and they're going to continue to grow. So does he just have to do it again in 1,000 years?
It's like the Reapers in Mass Effect, okay?
But think about it though, right? Like he actually doesn't have a solution. He has a Band-Aid, right? So his big thing about killing trillions of people, including his own daughter, which that's basically in cold blood, is for something that's temporary.
Yeah.
If he's got all six stones, can he make like unlimited food?
There's that argument as well. That yeah, theoretically.
Non-picking.
No. I've been reading a lot of people who actually had that thought, and it makes perfect sense. If he can kill half of life in the universe, why can't he double the life in the universe, right? Like, theoretically, he should be able to do anything he wants to do at this point, and he does the one thing that kills trillions of people that's temporary. So, like, yeah, I get that he has some inner conflict and he thinks he's doing the right thing, but it's also kind of stupid what he's doing.
I bet the surviving half people still won't use turn signals.
But the traffic in LA will be much better. The traffic in LA
will be much better.
I didn't live through everybody turning into ash to deal with this bullshit.
Yes, this is still terrible, guys.
I do think it would be interesting, and we're not going to, I don't think we're going to get to see this. I'd be pretty surprised what the normal day-to-day would be like in this situation. If half the population just vanished on Earth and you had all these empty houses and cars. Well, and
people are making comic strips of it where, you know, some guy rushes in to see his newborn baby and he and the baby fade away and the mom's just left there in the bed. And so, like, it would be pretty traumatic because think about it. Half of us would probably statistically be gone right now and it would just happen in front of your eyes. You'd witness loved ones and, like, it would be a very devastating world. And that's why I'm actually most excited for Rocket's storyline coming up, because he found a family only to lose it. Yeah. And
man, he lost everybody, too.
Yeah.
That's why it was so moving with the foreshadowing they did earlier, where Thor is talking about everything he's lost, and mm-hmm. Rocket's like, I have so much.
I think maybe, not to, of course, mention Star Trek yet again, but I think actually the MCU could take a cool page out of Star Trek and do like a 4-issue miniseries prior to Avengers 4 about some of these other things. Like, Star Trek did that before their more recent Kelvin movies, where they had this, like, you know, what was it, like, Countdown to Darkness, I think is what one of them was called.
They were really good.
Yeah. Like, you could then cover, you don't have to cover the big stuff then, because it's just like $12 in comic books, right? You could cover tiny stuff. You could cover what S.H.I.E.L.D. is having to put up with in this reality, or what the Defenders.
Show for that, but
we don't know to what level they're going to go into all of this, right? Because if things are reset, does it just erase an entire season of the TV show? Like, I'll be curious to see what happens there. The Defenders are in the same boat, right? We're going to get new seasons of Luke Cage. Is half the population going to disappear in the middle of the season? Right, so they could do some cool stuff with the comic books and have those be, you know, MCU comic books under maybe a different type of branding than the normal Marvel comic stuff. But yeah, could be interesting.
Mm-hmm. I actually hope, to Bruce Wayne 25's point about how Thanos originally killed everybody to please Lady Death. Like, I at this point, I think they've gone too far and introducing that, like, oh, wait, no, it was all for a girl. Then it'll turn out to be the Bane storyline in Dark Knight Rises, where you think he's doing something great and he's the reckoning, but it turns out it's just for a really good vagina. I'm going to be very upset because I'm tired of women being portrayed as that. Stop putting us on pedestals.
No, I agree with you. It's too late. They might have had an opportunity to use Hela as Death.
I don't think introducing... But... I think that if they went that route, it would have been great. And I think we talked about that once. But I think introducing a whole other character that's supposed to be, like, the main motivation for this other main character... I think that just making Thanos a good villain was enough. And I think that that would have been too much. I think, yes, there's plot holes with his motivation, but I think that it was a good motivation for a cinematic universe.
Yeah.
It was okay. I think that Brolin did a great job.
Oh, and
I
think, so captivating.
Yeah, he was great. I thought the visuals for Thanos were very good, even though, yes, I know he looks different than he did in his previous showings.
He's changed color purple a couple times, and his scrotum chin has changed size. It's fine.
I mean, they had to do it for a full movie now, so I get that some things probably had to be adjusted. And that's fine. I'm not going to go into any of that. But, you know, his motivations are a little weird, and his plan is a little silly to me. So... while Brolin did, I think, an outstanding job, the way it was written just, wasn't for me.
Well, again, this is clearly an open-ended storyline with a thousand different plot holes, or plot threads.
Yes.
That haven't been tied up.
Yes. So, we'll wrap things up. We have, do you want to go over the characters who are still alive?
That are confirmed. It's Captain confirmed, America, yeah. Thor, Hulk, Black Widow, Okoye, Rocket, Nebula, Iron Man, and War Machine. So pretty much all of our Phase 1 characters and one or two from Phase 2.
Mm-hmm.
And Okoye from Phase 3.
Right. She's the only Phase 3.
She is the only Phase 3.
Yeah. Maybe M'Baku is still alive. I don't think they showed him Faye anyway, did they?
He is an unknown as well.
So that could be kind of cool.
No. They did show him. He is still alive. He was on the battlefield watching.
Okay. So, I mean, that might be kind of interesting if they decide to bring him into the mix at all. I mean, they can't make him Black Panther since Killmonger destroyed all of the plant, right? So,
yeah, because there's no way they could ever retcon that.
Well, not in Avengers 4. I feel like they don't have enough time.
No, you're probably right.
All right, so any final thoughts before we provide our standard A, B, C, D grade?
Sorry we went long.
That's fine. We've gone longer for lesser films.
I still think it's a... You know, if you haven't seen it, go see it.
Yeah.
Ryan, anything?
I said most of the things I wanted to say.
Fair enough. Okay. So, Greg, it's your first time on the show. We do a normal letter grading system. Plus and minuses are okay.
It is the American system, so we skip E's.
Right. Though I don't recall if we've ever given a movie an F that we've reviewed. I think we've done D's before. But
I've done D's.
Yeah, I don't think we've done an F, though. All right, so we'll start with Ryan, and we just kind of go around the table. So...
it's a hard one to grade because you can't just take it on its own. You have to take it in the context of the whole universe because you'd be so confused trying to go in on your own. So I have a real hard time with it. I would probably give it an A-. I think it was extremely well done for the amount of things that they had that could have gone wrong. and I think it's going to make a crap ton of money. I don't think there's any argument about that. Yeah.
I agree with Ryan. I'm going to give it a solid A-. There were some problems. I nitpicked a few things. But the fact they had so many complex story arcs going on at the same time, what Rachel and you and Derek mentioned earlier about people, they separated them into good teams, the teams worked, it wasn't a jumbled mess, which it easily could have been. Like, I think Batman vs. Superman was kind of a jumbled mess.
Yeah.
And that was with, you know, two characters.
And that was with far fewer characters.
Three, I guess. Yeah. Wonder Woman showed up.
She showed up at the end. But I cared about the villain, I didn't like his motivations, but I liked what his delivery of what he was trying to do. He had a goal in mind. And he didn't get distracted by shiny objects. He's like, I'm going to get these damn stones, and I'm going to do what I said I was going to do, because...
I was wondering about the timeline, and they said he got them all in a day. Like, at the end of the film, well, they were like, what a all over the place day! And I'm like,
that's a hell of a day. But yeah, solid,
a lot of beaming.
Solid A-.
Okay.
I'm going to go with a B-, and I am reserving the right to change that upon a second viewing and the viewing of Avengers 4. Because, honestly, I think it probably will change.
You're going to have a Man of Steel situation.
It's possible. And I hope so. I want to like
things. I think you will.
I don't want to be the curmudgeon, jaded asshole. I want to be happy and optimistic. Like, this is my fandom.
I was optimistic that Man of Steel would have gotten better for you, and that was right. So I'm hoping that this movie is the same.
I mean, it's tough when we give these ratings now, because they do change. I mean, if I went back and re-rated all of the Marvel movies...
Suicide Squad.
Yes. Suicide Squad
Derek
is much...
Derek rated Suicide more... Squad the highest out of all of us.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably true. I don't remember, but I believe you. But that was after one viewing in theaters, and I really enjoyed it at the time. And when I rewatched it on Blu-ray, I was very disappointed.
I can only imagine, like, at the end of it, you were like, what was I thinking?
Dude, not even at the end of it. Like, halfway through, I'm like, really?
We made it to, like, one big explosion, and we were like, nope.
Did I see a different movie? Like, it was weird. But, you know, it depends. Like, when we were talking Thor Ragnarok a few months back, after seeing the movie, I was feeling kind of not great about it. And then after we talked about it, I was in love with that movie, and now it's one of my favorites in the MCU. So opinions change. New information should change your opinion on things. So this is how I feel about it today, having seen the movie just, you know, a few days ago. I would give it just a B, a solid B. I think they had an incredibly ambitious goal that they had to accomplish, and overall they did a good job. I think there's areas that it could have used some extra work. I think that, you know, we've kind of talked it over pretty well in detail, but if Avengers 4 makes this a better half of a movie, you know, then great. Maybe the answer is to just grade the two together as one film. I don't know.
We can do that when we review the next one.
Yeah. So that's it. So we've got two A minuses, a B minus, and a B from us.
All really high scores when you think about it. And you know,
I mean, chat's looking at A minuses and B pluses for the most part. So clearly it's not a bad movie by any stretch. It's not the worst in the MCU. It's probably not even in the bottom half of the MCU.
Yeah.
Which is saying a lot, because there are 19 movies. So... I guess that's going to be it for us. Do you know what are we doing next week?
Well, we did a lot of speculation, so we could do even more speculation about Avengers 4 if we want to, or we could do one of our favorites episodes, our favorite practical effects in films.
Ooh, that could be a fun one. I know Ryan would enjoy that.
What do you guys want to do?
I mean, that was my vote.
Okay. Let's do it.
The speculation next stuff is...
Next week, we're going to talk our favorite practical effects. So
in movies?
In just everyday life.
I meant like movies and TV?
Yes,
or
in movies.
Just movies.
No. You guys got to do everyday life.
Everyday. My favorite practical effect is this pen here. All right, so that's going to be it for us. Thank you all for tuning in. We are the Heroes Podcast Network. This is Screen Heroes. You can find us at heroespodcasts.com and at Heroes Podcasts on Twitter and Facebook, as well as Instagram and Twitch. You can join us live Tuesday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 Central at twitch.tv/heroespodcasts. A very special thank you to everybody who joined us in chat tonight. We truly appreciate it. We want to give a shout out to our top three Patreon patrons, which are J-Blood, Doc Rev, and Trackboy. So thank you all very much for your support. Whew, Ryan, you are Buster Props.
Yep.
Ray, you are Siren Ray.
Yep.
I am the Star Trek dude. Greg, where can people find you?
I'm on Yahoo and Twitter at @_Bittersteel, another Game of Thrones reference.
Fantastic. And you can catch Greg and I on Red Shirts and Runabouts every Friday, our Star Trek podcast. So thank you, everybody, for tuning in. We will catch you next week.